He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my
car. This is Jay here in Belgium.
And Robin and, here in Lakeville. And for this week's show, I think we have a few things we'd like to discuss regarding Tesla. Problems of the electric car industry, which are not really problems, it's just comments. And some things about Stellantis announcing that they're going to restrict the types of vehicles, types meaning gasoline only versus gasoline hybrid composites of certain vehicles to up to 14 states. We'll get back to that in a minute. Let me start out with a comment that the news lines around the automotive industry is that Tesla has started delivery of some of their pickup trucks. I'm not sure who's gotten them, but that seems to be happening. And I don't know when we will first see one in our broadcast listing area, but I'm going to be eagerly keeping my eyes open in case one of them happens to get to the East Coast. I think they're starting to deliver Teslas in the West Coast. Prices are $69,000 and up, as I read the articles on it. And I'm still not a big fan of the design, and I really don't know whether it's going to be act like a real pickup or it's just going to be sort of a toy for people. Jay, you got a comment on that?
Well, I'm not sure that they're available yet. I think we're still in a pre-production mode, but... and I think the price is higher. I'm hearing, I've read things like $99,000.
We don't need to discuss that. I know what the price line is that I read, but and it's for a model that's not yet available for the consumer to buy. I think it's a two-wheel drive one.
I think the specs of the truck are probably great, both power, towing capacity, range. But, you know, the looks are still debatable. The utility is still debatable. I still am not a big believer, and I've said it from day one. I think the Cybertruck is just going to hit a wall of bricks, which won't change it too much in its looks, because that's what it looks like. I think with the offerings from GM and Ford and Stellantis next year, Tesla is not going to beat any of them to market, unlike the SUV and car market before that. So I really don't think that truck is going to do too well in the marketplace. But it keeps being a subject of conversation, and so we're going to keep talking about it. But I really have nothing to say about it, and until we see one on the road, I don't think we need to talk any more about it.
I'll talk a little bit more in 30 seconds or so. Motor Trend has had a number of articles about the claim that the first trucks have been delivered. You may be right. They may be pre-production models, and they may be test beds for some people. Elon, in his usual bravado and everything he talks about, has made a statement, quote, the Tesla Cybertruck is our best product, said Elon Musk in some promotional meeting that he had somewhere. But as you said, we don't need to talk much about it until we actually see a real test from an automotive magazine or somebody else who gets it to see whether it's worthy of all the hype that Elon Musk claims it should be.
I think it is fast, and it can tow quite a bit. I just saw a glimpse of an article. I just got a glimpse of an article in which Tesla had put or CarMag had put a Porsche 911 on in the back, on the trailer in back of a Tesla Cybertruck, and the identical Porsche next to it, and they drag raced, and the Tesla towing the Porsche was faster than the Porsche.
That's hard to believe.
They've done this before. Yes, Tesla has extremely fast vehicles, but again, I don't know how practical it will be. I think the offerings from GM, Ford, and Stellantis and Rivian, for that matter, are much more practical, much more conventional looking, and technically just as
good or better.
Yeah. So,
I think you're right. And they are on the road. Rivian, I want to comment on today's show. It remains sort of dateless, but I now are seeing Rivians around our northwest corner in more numerical numbers. Two passed me within a minute of each other, and they were both the R1, what are the twos or the not the pickups? So they're getting into people's hands, and I like the looks of them. You like the looks of them. I think they're technologically wonderful in terms of what they can do with their four-wheel drive systems and the like, even though, as usual with all these fancy off-road vehicles that can do everything off-road sensationally, very few percentage-wise will probably ever try to duplicate the things that the magazines read about them when they try to take them on off-road trails to show you what they can do, and in the advertisements. But Rivian, I hope, is gaining traction in both in production so that they can stay safe as far, economically as far as the company goes, so people don't get stuck with something like I got stuck with a car called a Brickland back in the 70s, being one of the first to get that vehicle, only to find that approximately 2 years later or two model years later, they went out of business because they couldn't deal with the warranty costs that came online and
Robin,
other fast food.
I still think that vehicle was the perfect vehicle to electrify.
What, the Brickland?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, probably would have been. Anyways, well, it wasn't, and it doesn't exist in a production form anymore, so so much for that. to Stellantis, Jay, you and I talked pre-show about this topic that I'll try to keep brief, and you will too, that maybe we're going to find some issues with production availability of some gasoline versions of the Jeep Wrangler and I think the Jeep Grand Cherokee due to allegedly California's regulations about trying to limit the production, the sales of gasoline-only vehicles in their state. I don't know what the details of that are, but Stellantis has announced that they're going to cut a production shift at the plant that makes these vehicles, and they're not going to be shipping vehicles with gasoline-only powertrains of some of these vehicles to California and any of the states that follow California's emissions rules. So Jeep listeners, if there are any of you amongst us, if you're thinking of getting a Wrangler and you don't want the 4xe version, and that may apply to the Grand Cherokee because they've got a hybrid version of that out, you better go look now. I do not know what limited production or delivery capability of these vehicles are going to be to these states that follow the California guidelines, but Connecticut is one of them, as I believe is New York and Massachusetts. So that's all on that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure if that was an excuse or not. I mean, I read one article quickly about that. Yes, they're cutting down production.
Well, yes.
We'll see.
Into the other aspects of that.
Yeah. So I briefly, having been in Europe here for close to 2 weeks now, I see a lot less SUVs on the road than we have at home, or at least I see a lot more wagons. So there's still a market here for wagons, and I know that back at home, there are fewer and fewer wagons out there. And every time I see a nice wagon, like I just crossed about an hour ago on the road, a brand new BMW M3 wagon. And for those of us who like sports cars, but practical cars, sports wagons are still a way to go. Unfortunately, nobody's buying them on our side of the pond. And in fact, the next generation of the Porsche Panamera will not exist in the wagon form because the U.S. market will not support it. And
Does it exist in the European market still, though?
I'm not even quite sure of that. I would think yes, but I'm not 100% sure, actually. Most cars that you do, most wagons you we don't find at home anymore, we still you can still find here in Europe. You know, whether it be I'm trying to think. Yeah, well, the two, the Series 5 wagon, Series 3 wagon, Mercedes C-Class, you know, the smaller sedan has a wagon version of the car here in Europe. And it's just a shame we don't see them in the States anymore. But,
well, Jay, let me interrupt
as
you.
As we know,
you're using the term wagon over there correctly. The Mercedes has a wagon, what I call a wagon-looking design here in some of their lines, and so does Audi. They're called Avants or whatever they're called. Why is the wagon term not used in the U.S., in your opinion, for vehicles that look like wagons? Volvo also has vehicles that look mostly, to me, like wagons. And I presume
well,
that
Volvo
to me does
still
not mean
has
it's because I'm older than the listener group of this radio station.
Volvo still has two wagons, but I believe they have the V90 wagon, the big sedan, in the wagon
V60.
Form, but they only have it as a cross-country, so, you know, on steroids, jacked up like an SUV. And the V60, I'm not sure if they sell it as a regular wagon or only in the propped-up version, like the cross-countries, whatever they call them. Yeah, cross-country is Volvo's name for it. You know, with the cladding on the sides and the bigger tires and a little higher off the ground, which makes sense. And new cars handle very well, so you don't need to have them close to the ground anyway. But still, wagons are cool. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. So you don't see as many wagons on the roads over there? Is that what you start out with in this topic?
No. I see plenty of wagons here.
Oh, okay.
Plenty of wagons. Interestingly, too, the cars we see here, a lot of hybrids. I think we mentioned that. Electrification is going full bore, even more so than back at home. The obviously, you know, the EU's regulations have it that by 2030 there will be no more ICE cars on the road. That is already about to change, but there's a definite will to end the internal combustion engine. And we can go back to that debate and the pros and cons of electric cars. But the bottom line is they are coming sooner or later, probably not as fast as we or not as fast as the plan would be. But I think within the next 10, 15 years, we'll see them. And there's plenty of good reasons, you know, to go electric.
Well, it's certainly interesting to see on our side of the pond, so to speak, that the manufacturers are slowing their development of battery projects and or electric EV projects, at least in the latest news blips that are coming out of the industry, because, you know, I've said on shows way before this one, the American, in my opinion, the American manufacturers don't have much patience with trying to deal with products that don't jump off the shelves successfully in terms of numerical sales, and they move fast to try to counter any little shifts in those plans, and well, they're now moving slow down the development of EV products and battery factories because their sales have slowed a little bit.
I think,
and
yes, but let's
we
not
talk about that,
huge,
and you can jump in.
I
what
am,
is slowing the sales?
Influence.
It's not necessarily demand. It's interest rates. It's a whole matter of other things that are slowing sales, at least right now.
Let's start with what's between the manufacturer and the consumer, which is the dealer, and dealers are extremely powerful and influential. And you know, you remember a few years ago, you and I went and test drove a Chevy Bolt at a local Chevy dealership.
Yep.
And there was one Chevy Bolt, and it was parked in back of the dealership, and all the Suburbans and the Sierra pickup trucks were parked in front, all lined up. And then you had one miserable little electric car in the back.
Yeah,
and
you couldn't find it.
Dealers are both, you know, dealers make a good chunk of their revenue on their shops and what they sell after they sell you the vehicle. And there's this, you know, this fear on their part or this worry, and it's legit, that they're not, their shops are just not going to be running like they have been in the last 50 years repairing ICE engines.
Right.
I mean, electric vehicles have a lot less moving parts in them. They're a lot simpler. There's a lot less maintenance required. And dealers need to make money one way or another. So,
and they want to sell what they can sell and make the money on, which
exactly.
is not, which are, as you're saying, not EV vehicles as much as the ICE trucks and the SUVs that are jumping off the lots relative to the EV.
Look at the pushback from, I think it's Ford dealers just recently. Ford is backing off this electric, I don't know what they call it, the E-Ford dealers. So a bunch of dealers had to bought into this program and paid, it was a sizable amount of money to become EV dealers, and they had to make certain changes to the dealership and put charging stations. And a year or two into the program, they're backing out of it.
Setting up different places to market those vehicles, right, with an additional building or a separate
showroom in
a large building.
That program is kind of falling apart, and dealers are backing out of it. So I think the dealers are certainly have a great influence on the way the market is going. But inevitably, over time, electric vehicles will come and will stay.
But it will not
right
end
now, I think
use and ownership of ICE vehicles, because I don't think many of us, and yours truly included, are going to ditch their ICE vehicles just because electrification is the way we should be environmentally going.
Yeah, well, one issue with electric vehicles, and we've talked a lot about them, and, you know, range anxiety and battery production have been an issue, but there is just the risk of fire, and fire departments in urban settings have become, have been questioning the safety of having electric vehicles parked in parking garages. And if you have a fire in an electric vehicle in a parking garage, how do you put it out? And how
very
do you get
good
the car
point.
Out?
Very good and point for you electric vehicle owners listening to this particular part of the show, because there's been this discussion about what does happen if batteries catch fire and they're inside a building, besides catching fire at all for the vehicle itself. Is there going to be a danger of parking electric vehicles inside because of this potential situation, which you're sort of touching on?
Well, there is a danger. I mean, the danger is real. I mean,
yes, the danger is real.
So the question is, what are the consequences of the danger? I mean, Ford Pintos used to blow up and Jeep Cherokees in the early 90s,
right.
You know, with the gas tanks hanging just under the rear bumper.
Yep.
But those fires might have been deadly, and certainly were. But you could easily, a fire crew could put the fire out fairly easily. Electric cars, those batteries are extremely hard to put out.
Hard to.
And then so. You know, you have them inside a building, and it affects the structural integrity of the building. You have to tow those cars out. There's everything around them. So in urban settings, it is definitely becoming an issue, and there are more and more cars, and that risk. I mean, I'm sure these things will get better in time, but in the meantime, they're real issues.
I don't think we want to scare the listeners into avoiding buying an electric vehicle, but the point is well made that you've made. And I think, don't know what the percentage of fires that are occurring against the population of vehicles that have been sold, But it is a real possibility that it could be a long-term endangerment. But I'm sure that they're working feverishly to figure out a way to make sure these batteries do not catch fire.
Well, it's not too big of a concern in our tri-state area.
They can solve that by cooling properly or whatever. Can we move on to something else?
Sure.
I've got a little article here. There's been some talk about whether or not mandatory anti-speeding tech should be installed in vehicles to try to cut down further on accidents on the highways from speeding. And I don't know where we're going with that. I hope that we don't find that we get cars that can no longer go at higher speeds than they now can currently go, because it'll be deemed that it's a safety thing that should be mandatory and that should control people's ability to speed.
Let me barge in here again. I think that's a terrible idea for a bunch of reasons, and I certainly don't want to see it happen. On the other hand, what I do see, having spent, again, 2 weeks here in Europe, is camera and scanner speed enforcement is everywhere.
And rampant, right?
Absolutely. And in the 25 years that I've moved away from here, now I come back, I can see a change in the way traffic
behaves,
the way people drive. Yeah. So traffic has slowed down a lot. People follow speed limits. They go 30 Ks, which is 18 miles an hour in downtowns, and it works. And there are a lot less crashes. A friend of mine told me that the number of deaths on the roads in France has gone down from, I think it was around 25, 30,000 a year about 10, 15 years ago, and they're under 15,000 now. So literally less than half, and traffic certainly has not decreased in the last 10 or 15 years.
Right.
So
well, that's certainly
we have better cars, better safety, better markings on the road, and fair, that's my point, fair speed enforcement. And if everybody has to go the same speed, traffic behaves a lot better. On the other hand, you go up and down 684, you know this very well. The more traffic there is on our highways, and the faster traffic goes. And it makes no sense, because it becomes virtually impossible to enforce speed limits in high volume traffic. On the other hand, when there's nobody on the roads and there's no safety issue, it's very easy to get a speeding ticket. So
out on the Autobahn, for example, the Autobahn is it still unlimited speed capability, or is there speed controls?
Yes and no. There are sections where speed is unlimited. Those sections, there are fewer and fewer of them, but they also have adaptive speeds. So, if traffic gets dense, the unlimited sections will have like a 120K or 130K or 100K speed limit. So they will change the speed limit depending on traffic.
So the signage is there to help control that if necessary, but in other times when the traffic is less dense, you're saying that those signs will be either off or certainly allow much higher speeds. Whole idea of dampening somebody's ability to have a very high-performance car comes to mind as we're talking about this topic. And we have these vehicles in the U.S., which the Dodge Charger, I think, had special last year editions or something that could go from 0 to 60 and go 155 or 160 miles an hour and all that kind of thing. We already have enough trouble trying to drive a performance car in a performance way because of the speed limits on all our roads around where we're broadcasting from. But
those days are over. Let's face it.
Yeah, those days are over.
Sports car, you have to go to a racetrack. It's that simple.
Yeah. Okay.
Sadly, So I think we can almost leave it at that, maybe add a safety tip here or there. More wintry conditions. I'm not home, but you've been driving in
Russian snow?
Yes, we have yet to have a significant snowfall in our broadcast area or significant road impaired conditions because there has been no snow that which has been falling in a wet mode. Sticking to the roads, I have yet to see the salt trucks. Well, there were some salt trucks evidenced in Massachusetts because the roads were white. So there has been some salting going on, but nothing to, in my opinion, make people worry about driving so far as we head into the winter season, and we're in December when this show is done. So,
other than
saying that I hope the tires of everybody's cars have tread on them as opposed to no tread, as you brought up, I think, recently, and that you've got windshield washer fluid in your windshield washer containers so that if you need to clean off the windshield, if you're driving behind a truck throwing up a lot of spray, those two safety items should be continually checked as we move through winter.
I think that pretty much says it all for now.
So until the next show, we are Jay DeMarcus and Robin Leach.
I will see you back on the other side.